Welcome, dear listeners. This is the final podcast of 2019. Listen back to a full year of interviews. This week, my guest is Charlie Parr, primarily guitarist and singer-songwriter with his new project, Portal 3. Consisting of Charlie Parr on electric guitar, Liz Draper on bass, Chris Gray on drum set, I have an excerpt of their performance. Following that will be the interview with Charlie. It has been a heavy pleasure to spend this year having conversations with improvisers. Listen back to the other 41 episodes. For a parallax view of what improvisation can entail. I am your host, Paul Metzger, and as usual, the podcast is brought to you by the generous support of the Khyber Pass Cafe. And so, without hesitation, we move into the excerpt of Portal 3's performance. And into conversation with Charlie Parr. Thank you. Charlie Parr. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah. I know a little bit of you through a friend of mine, who came up in Austin with you. That's your hometown or thereabouts?
I grew up in Austin, Minnesota, yep.
Yeah. Yep, well, good friends make good food.
Yeah.
That was during the horrible strike.
Yeah.
They came up with that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a wild... I left right after that. That's when I left Austin.
You got out right after that horrible...
I was in the process of trying to leave because I dropped out of high school in 82.
Okay.
The strike came along a few years later.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been in the kind of process of trying to leave town.
Yeah.
And all of my friends had moved up to Minneapolis all of my friends moved up to Minneapolis, and most of them lived in one house over by Dinkytown. And I really wanted to come up and, you know, be part of the scene up here, you know.
The scene as in cats that had come up from Austin, or, you know, the general Minneapolis music scene?
Both. Because to me, they looked like the same thing. You know, my friends in Austin who were playing music, you know, ended up in bands like Gear Daddies and Drag Hounds and the Third Eye and, you know, all the stuff Michael Thompson was doing, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And everybody was playing music, and I was playing, I was trying to play music.
Were you in combo then, or were you solo, or what was your...
I was solo. I've always been kind of solo until this kind of stuff. I try to play with other people, but I've never been very good at it. And the thing that I listened to when I was coming up was, like, records that my dad had of solo folk and blues artists.
Yeah.
And that's what I dug, and that's what I tried to play like. And so you get together with other people, and your point of reference is totally different, you know. My friends when I was growing up in Austin, going to middle school, you know, we were all listening to a lot of, like, you know, Black Sabbath and AC/DC, and I liked that too.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was also listening to Manslips, Coleman, Lightning and Hopkins,
mm-hmm.
and Leadbelly and Woody Guthrie. So that's the stuff I was trying to play. And I wasn't, you know, as much as I loved listening to Black Sabbath, I wasn't feeling like playing it.
Yeah.
You know, so I mostly play by myself, which, you know, put me in a weird position of, like, you know, not being with a band, you know, not being with a group, you know, and just kind of, I go down to there's a couple bars in Austin that the country bands, so you can play the break set, you know, and they would take healthy breaks.
Yeah.
You know.
So you're doing a full on set.
I was doing like 30 minutes or more.
Yeah.
Early 30s National.
Okay.
That was barely playable, but it was National, so it was worth trying, you know.
Yeah, it's legit.
Yeah, and I go down there and try to play little Sun House songs. No one in, you know, in these rough kind of country bars, they were not hearing that music, and occasionally you get someone who kind of recognized it, and they were kind of into it, but it was also hard to hear it. And,
yeah.
But I got to play, you know, in front of people, and that was a huge thrill. Mm-hmm. I played, you know, on the sidewalk in downtown Austin.
No, you're busking.
Yeah.
In Austin, how's that?
It's nothing.
Yeah, I would think
you might as well be
like,
at home.
Yeah.
There's no reaction at all. There was no reaction.
Yeah.
I mean, I was relatively sure that people could hear what I was doing, because you could see. Like, they'd move their head slightly, so you knew that they could actually hear you, but they wouldn't react to it at all. I mean, I never, like, there was never any, you know, cash coming into my guitar case.
So. The case is open. You're standing there, you're playing the National.
I had even seated the case with some change.
You're no fool, you know how to do it.
I'm near the case with my guitar,
singing,
you know, singing Death Letter Blues, you know, as a teenage white kid in Austin, Minnesota, and nothing.
Nah.
I'm not even surprised when I say it out loud. It just sounds ridiculous.
Yeah, but not one.
No.
Because there's a thing.
I would have been so proud of that one anything.
Oh, please. You get in a situation like that, and then you just start to count on pity. Maybe one person will pity me.
Right.
But not even. You're not even pitiful. You'd have to improve to become pitiful.
Exactly.
You'd have to work hard.
Yeah. I was playing, but, you know, I was playing. So it was fine. Yeah. Because I played all the time. Yeah. And I went home and played more, you know.
Yeah.
And then I played so much, I dropped out of high school in favor of playing the guitar.
Yeah.
I did poorly at the stupid little jobs that I had.
Uh-huh.
And that way to this day. I haven't worked a job in 20 years now, and just for playing the guitar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not complaining. I think it's great.
Yeah. I mean, obviously it's great. You know, I mean.
But when I came up to the cities, you know, I came up from Austin, I came up to the cities, and like that first weekend, it was the first or second weekend I was there, Mike Nicolai said, oh, you should go down and see Spider John Kerner play. You'd like him.
Yeah.
And, you know, Mike was not a close friend, but I liked him very much, and I still like his music, and I thought, if Mike Nicolai says go see Spider John, that's where I'm going.
Yeah.
And I was hanging out with him and Baby Grant Johnson trying to play blues, and I went down and I saw, so I'd see Spider John on Sunday at the Viking Bar.
At the Viking, yeah.
So sometimes there's 6 or 8 people there.
Yeah.
On Thursday, I'd go down to the Times Bar on Nicollet.
Yeah.
Downtown and see Dave Ray and Tony Glover play.
Yeah.
Friday, I would wedge myself into the 400 Bar to see Willie Murphy play the piano.
Okay.
And then Saturday, I would just, like, whoever was playing around town, sometimes guitar players like Phil Haywood used to play around the lot. I'd go see him play.
Yeah, he played at the Riverside Cafe.
The Riverside Cafe was right around the corner. I lived in a rooming house on the West Bank behind the Mixed Blood Theater.
Oh, okay. So
you're
right there.
And so I'd just go down there or go downtown. I like to see the Cows play.
Yeah.
You know, anytime I got to see any of the, kind of at that point, you know, seeing Husker Du, the Replacements, was kind of a little tougher, but you could see them.
Yeah.
And I did.
So what year about, like?
84.
84.
Somewhere
there. Yeah.
84 to, you know, I don't know, I left Minneapolis to go to Duluth in 99, so.
Okay, so that's a pretty long stretch.
That was my span.
Yeah.
But, and it was great, you know, I loved it. I gave up, you know, the jobs that I had, if they got in the way of my schedule, I quit.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. So you were convinced early that was your work, sounds like.
I was convinced that that's what I loved and that's what I wanted to do, but I never really thought of it as something that I'd be able to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, a lot of the people that I associated with were doing it, and I didn't see myself as being that brave or having those kind of stones that I could actually go do it, you know, for real.
Yeah.
I could do a coffee house gig now and again, and I would, you know, take shows whenever I thought I could get them. I played a residency at the Ace Box Bar on Tuesdays, you know.
On Uni and Fairview-ish? Like,
yeah, it's the
it's the Dubliner now. Yeah. Man, the fucking Ace Box, I remember going in there. That was the real McCoy.
It was great. I'd sit up in the window, you know, and just play. And sometimes Baby Grant would come down with me and we'd play. Sometimes I'd just be down there by myself. It's like busking in Austin. I mean, people are not paying a lot of attention, but I got to play.
Yeah.
And I got to feel like I was actually doing it, you know.
Yeah.
And so I did it, and it was, and that's what I did. I didn't feel like I was, like, you know, up against, you know, or doing it as a career, like, you know, kind of competing with anybody. I just felt like I was getting to do something that I didn't get to do before, and then I'd go back and work at the temp agency, or I, you know, had just all number of warehouse jobs and, you know, landscaping jobs in the summer and junk like that, so. Mm-hmm. You know, it was only after I moved to Duluth that it seemed like I could actually play music. And
what changed up there for you?
Duluth is the first weekend I was in Duluth, I met Alan Sparhawk.
Okay.
And he was really encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know what changed. What changed when I got to Duluth is suddenly there was a lot of places to play. I was like a new thing, so people would come and see
fresh
me play.
Meat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Lowe was also doing really well in Minneapolis, so yeah. When I came back down and like looked for gigs in Minneapolis, they said, "Oh, you're from Duluth," and I wouldn't correct them, and they'd say, "Oh yeah, we love Duluth. Sure, you can play here."
Oh right.
You know, and suddenly I'm not part of the scene anymore. I'm coming from somewhere else, and I got gigs.
Oh, so up there you're from somewhere else,
and down here I'm from somewhere else.
You're always like the out of towner.
And as time went on. And I started to like inhabit this like, what do you call it? The transient musician, itinerant folk singer kind of motif. You know, that's my whole life now.
Yeah.
You know, I don't really permanently live anywhere. I've been, you know, a couple of years ago, I was on the road for 272 dates. You know.
Yeah, it's mental.
It was wild.
Yeah.
And so now I've kind of fully inhabited that spot. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know.
And how's that feel as a headspace and a human being with so much motion and distance? How does that hit you?
It doesn't hit you until you stop.
Dang.
You know, last year, August, I broke my shoulder.
All right.
And I was off the road for 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And the day after I broke my shoulder, I was trying to remember the last time I had went for a day without at least playing the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't remember that day.
Yeah.
You know, and then, of course, as that first week went on, you know, they hadn't even operated on it yet. The surgeon was still saying, "I don't even know what to tell you yet because it's so swollen up. It was such a bad accident that said, until the swelling goes down and we can see what happened, I can't tell you if you're going to be able to play again." And so that first week, and of course after the operation he said, "You're going to be fine. We're going to have you back on the road again." Mm-hmm. But that first week, I was from like contemplating just whether or not I was going to be able to do it without, you know, killing myself because I didn't know what my identity was going to be without music. To trying to figure out what else I could do. I felt pretty unemployable, you know, 52 years old. I mean, I haven't got any skills, you know. I worked odd jobs and this and that and played guitar all my life.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really mess with your head until you don't do it. I mean, it feels totally natural now to like get up in the morning and wonder where you are.
Yeah.
Once you figure out where you are, then you have to figure out where you got to be, and then you go there and you start that process again. You know?
Yeah. How do you handle the thing like you get there, and then maybe people are talking to you, going, "Oh, where are you off to tomorrow?" And then, but you don't know. You
don't remember.
What do you say?
I say I'm. I don't have any capacity for making up. I just say, honestly, man, I have to look right now because these days, you know, they just flow into one. And then time is funny, and I don't understand what, you know, time is, you know, is like a, you know, it feels like, you know, when you're cutting something on a lathe and like it's metal and it comes off in this weird spiral.
Yeah.
And it touches itself and points and other points. It seems like it's stretched out. That seems like time does that sometimes. And you feel like at times I'm like, I'm going through Portland for the fourth time in 2 years.
Yeah.
In the same place. And it seems like the same people. And it feels like the same schedule. And I'm wondering, last time I was here, where did I go after Portland? And am I doing that again now? Am I like, is this time like not, is it not, is it acting like that? Is it touching itself in some kind of weird way? Is this actually happening?
Eternal occurrence?
Right.
Like,
and you know, since you're alone most of the time, I don't play in a band, and I don't have a drummer to turn to and say, "Hey, you know, what the hell is actually going on?"
Yeah.
And it's just me in here.
Yeah.
And as soon as you start to say those questions to yourself, that hole gets really, really deep. And I start, you know, it's just, it starts to like bleed over into a lot of other parts of your life. And, you know, you end up in strange towns saying really odd things to people you'd never met before. And then you've got to kind of catch yourself and say, you know, I don't know who I'm talking to right now. I maybe should probably be quiet.
It's interesting the difference between just moving through that alone and with one other person. Those two experiences, let's say everything else is the same. Man, that is a different planet.
Yeah. Yeah.
One person that you're communicating with versus it's you. I think something happens to people's perception as part of whatever sort of wild man baggage we have.
Yeah, yeah.
Like survival. So, like, needing to vibe much more on people you meet. You know, like.
Right. Because you didn't have that. Well, I took Liz Draper and I. We went out on the road and did the folk show thing one tour, which was amazing to me.
Okay.
I was like, I didn't know it could be like this. Yeah. Because all these things we're talking about right now are worked out in the van. You know, you get them worked out, and you know, because you can check each other.
It's huge.
Hey, I happen to know that it's Thursday.
Yeah,
you know, and I know that we're going to Baltimore.
Yeah,
you know, and you can check all this stuff before you get.
And oh yeah, there's that one cat there.
Right, right.
Bob!
You can do that work before you get to the place. You don't have to do all that stuff on your own, or not do it on your own and find yourself in front of strangers trying to do it.
That's right.
You know, and when we started to, like, work out what this thing was going to be, I thought, you know, I'd never realized that, you know, you could have it that way and like, you know, be, like, have sympathetic people in the van.
Yeah.
You know, that's pretty amazing.
It's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. The difference is astounding, I would say.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like the other stuff too, because I don't think I would ever be able to stop playing, you know, those folk shows by myself, because I really enjoy that.
You dig it? Yeah,
I really do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so then, there's that life and movement for you, and then this trio. Is that your first sort of group? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, where you're playing with some other cats on the reg, and it has a name, and is this it for
this
you?
This is the first one. I mean, I've done things with other people, with my own stuff, but the difference has been then it's been my stuff. I wrote the song. You know, I have a thing in my head about the song.
Mm-hmm.
I have a difficult time explaining what that thing is to other people because I'm not educated about it. I'm self-taught. So, telling, you get a harmonica player and a percussionist together and telling them that you really need this song to sound more green than yellow.
Yeah.
You understand?
Oh, yeah.
And then, you understand. And sometimes they do too, you know, but, This thing isn't my music. It's our music. It's improvisational music. I don't know what's gonna happen. I have an idea of what I like to have happen, but you know, it's pretty amazing to feel like you get blended into a thing suddenly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Whereas you were the thing before. You know, when I show up in Portland by myself,
you're the focus.
And you have to fill in I like this idea that in like old time music and like pre-war kind of country blues has a drone that threads its way through it.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. And you can feel it when you lose that drone. So I do a lot of work when I'm practicing by myself or when I'm playing solo shows, I do a lot of work to try to maintain that feeling of there's the drone, there's the thread that the song kind of sits on top of.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible to play in a group that drone is always going on. It doesn't really go away. When you start to lose it, you know, the other two people have it there for you, and you can rely on them to keep that foundation steady. And that feels, it spoils me in a way. You know, you get back to my solo show, and I'm like, I've got to keep this work going. You know,
you have so much more weight to carry,
yeah,
as just you in a chair. Whereas two other cats, it's not your, they aren't your work.
Right.
It's your part of it. Yeah, that's a luxury.
Yeah.
That's a luxury apartment.
Yeah. Well, I know that you understand that, so.
Yeah. People, the difference is astounding, and they're both great things.
Yeah.
They're both astounding things to get a chance to be a part of, and then there you are, you have that now.
Yeah.
And at a pretty late, now I'm not saying late stage, but you put in a decade solo.
No.
And then now this is a new thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's cool.
Yeah, I'm excited about whatever's coming next with it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, and I've listened to the music that I've listened to over the years, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, like even when I moved to Minneapolis, I was so excited to be able to get to go hear just a wide variety of music, you know, kind of everywhere.
Mm-hmm. That was a really good time, I think.
That was
in town, in like, you know, 83, 85, in that zone. There were a lot of different kinds of combos.
There was tons of stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there would be weird, like, I remember the West Bank Festival.
Yeah, Cedar something.
The Cedar, yeah.
Fest.
I think in one afternoon I saw TVBC,
mm-hmm.
I saw the Meat Puppets.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember that year.
I saw it just like, and Spider John playing on the sidewalk in front of Palmer's.
That's insane.
And I'm like a pinball, like going around that festival thinking, look at all this stuff here, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And we'd go out and see all kinds of different things, and I was just, you know, my listening habits have been like that, especially since then, and they deepen now, you know, into listening to a lot of different kinds of things, but I never really thought that I would get to, like, break too far away from, you know, folk guitar, blues guitar kind of world.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been good.
Yeah, that's really cool. So tell me a little bit. I know you got to set up and prepare your outfit for this evening.
Yeah.
You know. But, so I won't keep you too long, but how is it like stepping into that space where you start playing and there's no map, there's no structure, there's no direction anywhere, and you're just hearing, it's like much more like conversational, and it evolves. I mean, that's huge to step out of the song structure into an open structure. I mean,
it's a very big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, because to me it feels like normally I'm by myself, you know, I'm having a conversation kind of internally, not listening to anything else. I'm certainly not listening to the audience chatter or anything. I'm listening to something inside of me, but it's like playing chess against yourself.
Yeah,
you can't really spring anything on yourself, you know.
That is fucking great.
Yeah, you just—that's what it feels like. As fun as it is, and I mean, as much as I get out of that internal dialogue, it's still a dialogue with yourself.
Yeah.
So then you come to this thing, and suddenly I'm listening outside of my head to this conversation, both musical conversation and actual conversation, that you can tell when you're like, when I've done something that's not quite gonna fit, you know, you feel that from externally.
Yeah.
You know, when I do something on my own show that isn't right, I'm like beating myself up inside, but you know, punching yourself in the face is much different than getting punched in the face by someone else.
That's right.
The velocity is quite a bit different.
Yeah.
So I value that difference a lot.
Yeah.
And I think that it helps me when I go back to doing the solo thing to understanding how kind of myopic my solo stuff is.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the nature of the creature.
I don't really understand that a lot of the times, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I go play shows by myself and think that I'm bringing something, you know, bigger than myself when I'm not, really. Because, I can't go into my own head and produce something bigger than that. I can't, anyway. I know a lot of performers who can, but I'm not
it's
one of them.
It's something that can happen, though, that, you know.
I know it can happen. I don't feel like it's something that I do either easily or naturally or maybe even well. I think it's something that in my experience, if I try to do that, it really isn't going to work.
Oh yeah, that's one of the things you can't try to.
Kind of, I felt that kind of transcendence before it shows, and as soon as I feel it, it goes away.
Yeah, it doesn't abide observation well.
At all.
Yeah.
No, and I know it's there, and I know it can happen.
Yeah,
I feel like I've gotten there at points. Mm-hmm. I recognize it after the fact.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of how it works.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy. I've thought about this topic a lot. But it's astounding that it's almost proof of the metaphysical. And that's saying quite a bit.
Yeah. No, I think that's right.
I think that's crazy.
Right. Because as soon as you put your mind on it,
mm-hmm.
you know, you just blow the whole thing to pieces.
Is kind of a superpower.
Exactly. Because I don't think I can help it. Because I'll start like, here we go. Like, oh, no.
Yeah.
No, guess not. I got to stop thinking. Now that I'm thinking about it, I'm never going to get it back. But
it's funny because on this topic, I think a lot about the early Sufi poets
mm-hmm.
and how they wrote, so like Kabir and Rumi and Mirbai. Those three are the ones I've read, so I'm sure there's a billion others, but the way they talk about not preparing but sort of setting the table
mm-hmm.
for the unexpected guest. And talking about that, like, make yourself open to that maybe somebody's going to drop in, but you can't count on it. And it just, and it's about that, for me, it's about that, like, push and pull between desire and lack of desire.
Right.
And I think it's just beautiful and heavy. And for me, it's relatable toward... you know, the kind of work I do.
Yeah,
but I'm wondering about, so improvisation in your, what we'll call your solo work.
Mm-hmm.
What role does that play, improvisation, in that music?
I've been saying this for a while, but, you know, because mm-hmm. I don't think that the songs that I write are ever done. It's not like being a painter or being an author. You don't write something down or paint a picture and give it to someone and then get to edit it later. You know, with what I do is, like, I get out on the stage and I like performing. I don't really care for recording that much, but I really mm-hmm. like performing because then, you know, you can do just like you said. You can just, like, okay, I'm gonna roughly play this song that I wrote
mm-hmm.
or the song that I learned and kind of rearrange to my own liking, which is a thing that Spider John kind of showed me over the years, is you can bring these things in and you can push them back out again as your own music.
He's the master of that.
He's the master of that. He's a walking embodiment of the folk process.
Yeah, and I remember seeing him in the 70s, mid-70s, or one of the earlier Cedar Fest things.
Yeah.
And he would play a tune, an old tune, and I wouldn't even know what it was.
Right.
But it's a folk tune that I knew, but where he wants to land in it is so him.
And see, that's exactly what, when I'm performing, I always think about
mm-hmm.
John.
Yeah.
And I think about one night when I played with him at Palmer's.
Oh, yeah?
And I'm on stage, and he's like, what do you want to play? And I was like, oh, you know, I love your version of Leatherwing Bat. He said, yeah, well, I don't know if there's going to be a spot for you in that room, you know, today.
I hear you.
And he said, let's play Delia, and we played it, and it was amazing.
Yeah.
So then I played a couple songs, and then after mm-hmm. he got done, you know, he played Leatherwing Bat for me, you mm-hmm. know, And he started playing this song, like, what's that? That's crazy. That's amazing. That's wonderful. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, it's Leatherwing Bat.
The fuck,
and of course there's no room for me in there, because it's not a room I've been in before.
Yeah.
You know, and so I sit down to play, and I think, the way that I, like, folk singers have to talk to the audience between the songs, you know, it's something you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And I don't like doing it, because I don't have, I'm not like full of self-confidence, and it takes a lot of self-confidence to do that.
Yeah.
So the way I've started to do talking to the audience is I just say something, whatever's in my head.
All right.
I'll say it. And then once it's out hanging in the air, I have to do something about it. So
that's
I have
right.
to say the next thing.
Yeah.
So
you just splash something down on the canvas.
Right. And then realize what it is, and and then you got to start trying to fix it.
Yeah.
So I've started to try to do that with music.
Okay.
And especially if I feel myself getting, like, bored with a way that I've been doing something.
Sure. Yeah.
Start to try to do it a different way. Start to play it backwards. Just start doing something.
Yeah.
Thinking, I'm going to play this song, but I'm going to do it this way.
Goddamn.
And then think, what is that? And then trying to, like, settle that down into the thing that I want it to be, and then it'll turn into something, and it'll be fine. It's always been fine.
Yeah.
As long as I just jump into it and stop, you know, fucking around in my head so much with it, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting, because there's so much, there can be so much pressure for, like what you're talking about, like for an artist, you know, you can frame your piece and then that's done.
Right.
Or a novel is thing, or even an album is printed.
Right, right, exactly.
But it certainly is part of the form to, of a lot of things, to not want to be inside that space, but to look at this thing that's a song structure and want to look at it from different angles and perspectives, and that's interesting to me.
Yeah.
That move. And there's a lot of pressure on artists to not do that.
Well, yeah, people want to hear the song that they heard on the record. Or
And like how they know it, you know.
Yeah, and I don't know. I get really excited when I hear artists, you know, just going ahead and playing some, you know, some familiar piece in a really, really odd way. Or playing it upside down or backwards. Or just letting themselves explore it from a different point of view.
Yeah, I mean, Bob Dylan built like a huge live career on that.
Yeah, and I love him for that. I don't want Bob Dylan to get bored with his own songs.
No.
I'd love to hear what he thinks about them now. And that's what he thinks about them now. This is it now. This is it today. What you're hearing, what you've got on your record, is what it was in 1964. This is what it sounds like today.
Yeah.
You know, that's as legitimate, if not more legitimate than anything else for me. And I, you know, not that I'm feeling like I'm that kind of artist, but when I sit down to play any song, there's a few blues songs like Luther Huff's 1951 Blues that I have run the gamut of playing them and in all kinds of different, sometimes it's fun to me just like put a capo on like some crazy fret, just pick one,
because
a lot of them, just put one on there
and
see if I can't play the song there.
Yeah.
And it's a blast.
Yeah, that's killing.
And
I love that.
I mean, it sometimes it kind of sinks, but I found some really interesting stuff that kind of grows out of that.
Yeah.
And for me, that's kind of the nature of, you know, my kind of version of improvisation, I guess.
That's dangerous work. Because it's in front of folk.
Yeah.
You're not just at your place or whatever. You're like, oh, what is that like if I just fuck this
string? When you're at home, that's called practice.
Yeah. But when you decide, or some chance thing happens and you need to, that is the kind of bravery that I admire.
And it
happens in a lot of genres.
Yeah. Yeah, and I love the energy that you get off the audience when suddenly people like recognize something that you're trying to put across. You know?
Yeah.
Or the confused kind of energy that you get off people when you're in the weeds really hard, and you're trying to bring it out to them, and they want you to do it.
They're counting on you, man. You can do it, and they hear you rustling around with the machete, but they can't really. They don't.
Oh, they want to see you come out of the trees, and that comes through to me.
So
I mean, I feel that. I don't. I've been lucky. I've had such amazing audiences, and they've always wanted me to go ahead and emerge from the tree line with whatever it was I was carrying. Mm-hmm. So I always appreciated that.
The thing is, I mean, I look at that just to, you know, as such a beautiful compliment and gift to the audience. Being like, let's just see.
Yeah.
If you want to pay attention to it for a minute, maybe there's something where maybe it's not. Right. And then if they, then people want that.
Yeah.
What a feeling that is.
I'm part of that audience too. I go to shows.
Yeah.
You know, not wanting to see failure bullshit. I go to shows wanting to see someone bring something out that they want to bring out, you know?
Well, that's always, huge.
Yeah, I feel like that's, I mean, you know, nowadays I don't get to go to many shows anymore, but, you know, I have gotten to see some shows recently, and I just feel like I want there to be some great thing that comes out of those trees, and I know that there can be, and I can be expectant, and I can have an attitude of that kind of expectancy that will help that person on stage because I know it helps me.
Yeah, that's so heavy. That is heavy. Well, Charlie, man, I'm gonna let you get back to setting up, and I want you to have a good show here tonight.
I like that,
and,
too.
I'm looking forward.
Me too.
Thanks again for
being
part of this thing.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
And so once again, we attain terminus. My guest this week was Charlie Parr. This episode brings to a close a year in conversation with improvisers. After a brief hiatus, the podcast will return for the year 2020. Thank you again for listening. I'm your host, Paul Metzger. Bringing you conversations with musicians, improvisers, who have performed at the Khyber Pass Thursday Night Music Series. Thank you for listening. And until next time, please feel the gratitude You are a very narrow slice of the demographic pie. Having an interest in the avant-garde, the experimental, and live performance. And of that, an even more narrow slice of those interested in what's behind this music. Thank you.